Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio, and together partners at Amity Kett.
Today, Diane and I want to talk a little bit about what we've learned during this season, where we've been talking about disciplines and a disciplined approach, and all of the different. It's interesting to kind of gather together all of the different voices that we've heard, and what their approaches are, and we've learned so much, and there's been a lot of emotional talk, and so just kind of wanted to circle back in this final podcast of our season, our fourth season, about what we've learned, and then a little bit of talk with Diane and I about what kind of our favorite discipline is, like the discipline of history and looking at things through the filter of history. We've had a lot of interviews, a lot of learning this season.
Yeah.
A lot of people have come on talking about their different disciplines and the problem solving, et cetera, with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I have, first of all, I found it really interesting to listen to people's personal stories and how they got involved in their fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are always fun.
And then I felt like some emotional impact when people would talk about, when Laura Daly was talking about making heirloom furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we were talking about Katie was talking about buying and selling furniture, and, you know, it's so interesting that so many people in our field are moved by the emotional impact of what they do. Katie talking about how she feels about the furniture and the furnishings and how it's not about the bottom line. And then
Brad with his relationships.
Yeah. Relationships. Mm-hmm. And then Paper Moon talking about their desire to set up a school or some sort of educational program for people to learn mm-hmm. their trade. And so I feel, and then Kevin Ivester talking about,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, that was so interesting about
mm-hmm.
how his clients are his artists, which was kind of mind-blowing to me. So I think I have learned so much just about these people that we never necessarily take the time to kind of sit down together and ask them what moves you, what motivates you. We're always kind of like trying to mm-hmm. move projects forward. So that was a really nice for me to be able to do that.
And then all about the research and design and how that gets approached.
Yes, Deborah, that was fascinating.
Psychology and sociology, we talked about some. And then we were able to have Dr. Deborah Harris,
yes.
and talk about some of her research projects, which are just really fascinating at the depth of detail that people go into to research things that we sit on every day.
Yeah.
Or in the healthcare environment, like her the preemie, I can't remember, the IC.
Oh, the IC, the NICU.
Yeah, the NICU.
Yeah,
that's
true. That was emotional.
How that affected their study, whether they want to be intimate in their own room or have all the babies in one room. I mean, that's just a fascinating study.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, what she does touches on so many different aspects, too. So today, what are we going to talk about, Diane? We're going to talk about some of our own interests, right? Because you and I have such an interest in history and the history of design.
Well, I think part of it also is that, you know, we've talked about all these disciplines, and when we look back through the history of all these different styles, you can start to see how disciplined they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to do with all these other disciplines playing a part in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think we were just going to touch on some of the fun architecture and interior design styles of the past.
Yeah. So, Diane, I know you and I both have kind of talked about and been interested in, you know, we've talked about discipline in architecture and discipline and rules. And so as we were kind of going through our favorite moments in architecture history and art history and interior history, we discovered there was quite a swing between ornate interiors and ornate architecture, and then maybe a pullback, and then that general swing that happens in fashion.
It was constant.
And back mm-hmm. and forth. So,
yeah, definitely in fashion too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah, so like we were looking at the Palladian architectural style, which I don't know how many of you know, but so Andrea or Andre Palladio.
Palladio.
Mm-hmm. In the 1500s, he basically took off of all of the Greek and Roman design of architecture, which mostly I think was a lot of those column-fronted temples, and kind of playing off those classical forms. They're always full of symmetry and strict proportions, and sometimes they seemed a little austere, but it was following a very strict set of rules. And so, you know, that kind of gave you a feeling, right?
Right. I mean, it feels like
those buildings.
Order, structure, reliability. I know banks are often built in that.
Right. So then the neoclassical happened after that, and or not after, but soon after. And we started having where I think because they were so temple-like that we end up with Buckingham Palace. And even the White House has a nod to the
houses of state. And so it's
importance, banks.
Banks, structure, order.
Civic buildings.
Washington, D.C. Yeah, I agree.
And then even houses that would have these two-story porticos.
And in a lot of the postmodern architecture, there is a little bit of pulling from that period as well. You know, I know that the 1980s houses that were all kind of pulling from neoclassic or classic architecture as well.
Right.
But in a home style, pretty unique.
Very unique. It was definitely a response.
Right.
And it was a different response. Another one is the Art Nouveau period, which was a response to all of the industrial age and everything that was happening there. And so there was this reaction where they suddenly wanted to go back to nature and, you know, have this more decorative,
free
pretty, free form, floral and all of that. They also, it was a time of some of the women suffragist movement, so they also were thinking this would get women excited about staying in their house and decorating. So there was some of that
political
as well.
Stuff.
And there was a lot of the celebrating the feminine on that and trying to get them more focused on that and less focused on getting the right to vote, I guess. But yeah, there were a lot of great things that happened there. And like Rennie McIntosh did all of his images and paintings in the tea rooms and all that he did throughout Scotland. And they were all very feminine.
Yeah, and Palladian, I would say, would be much more masculine and austere. And
probably, yeah.
Less form. So, yeah, I have my own interest in kind of maximalist, beautiful, everything ordained interiors, for sure, which I'm, you know, I appreciate a clean line as much as anybody, but I do really like that right now, currently, at least in interior design in the region that we're in, maximalist interiors is coming back, which harkens back to me, to one of my favorite periods. As an English major, I studied the Romantic poets. As a young teen with teen angst, I listened to the new Romantics coming out of England, you know, Duran Duran, and I really appreciated that kind of ornate, over-the-top Romantic in the terms of not just like frilly pastel rooms adorned, fresh-cut roses, things like that, but also just moody, dark spaces that kind of are everything from cheesy, you know, rom-com type things to sad poetry, rainy days, Morrissey music. It just really tied in really well to my own like teen angst and what was happening with
the
a lot of the
was
music.
You yearned for the romance.
Yeah, the romance. So romance as an escape, not just as like love affairs or, you know, in that kind of way. So I think that really was a very interesting thing that happened at that period in the 80s where people were kind of appreciating that really moody romantic escapism, and I certainly did.
So Duran Duran was romantic?
Mm-hmm. They were called the New Romantics. And so I looked up, because I wanted to talk about this today, I looked up the definition of romance, because I knew I might get pushback on what it all means. Yeah. Not from you, but in general. So a feeling of excitement and mystery associated with love, and a quality or feeling of mystery, excitement, and remoteness from everyday life, which I had
hungry
never.
Hungry like a wolf?
Yeah, absolutely. They reflect, there's mystery involved in that. It's a showcase for kind of self-expression, which we all know teens are really into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Escapism, and there was a romantic movement, a historical romantic movement, looking at romanticism. It gives, like, further insight. It's all about dreamy, escapism. Romanticism was an artistic movement that originated in Europe from 1800 to 1850 and characterized by an emphasis on emotion, individualism, nature, and the glorification of the past,
mm-hmm.
which I think everyone in every period, or maybe this isn't exactly true, but we always romanticize things we're not part of. Grass is always greener. It used to be better.
Right.
It was always better then.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is kind of an interesting thing. There's some melancholy involved in that. And all of this to me, and what we learned from what we were just talking about the list of people that we had interviewed this week this season has been about emotion, right? And how we're emotionally driven as human beings to pursue what we pursue, and how we're guided a lot of times by our emotions. So I think the romantic period is something I was thinking about for that reason. In many ways, romantics were reacting against the Industrial Revolution and the Enlightenment movements, A lot of the artists at that time were hearkening back to medieval legends, like the Arthurian legend.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And romanticizing the past. And I think right now in the 2020s, it's easy to fall back into that. This is how things used to be before COVID and then I think also the fascination with romanticism comes out in fashion, which we did talk a little bit about this year. And like I said, the new romantics in the period of the 80s wearing the big flouncy shirts and very feminine, right?
Puffy sleeves.
Puffy sleeves.
And the printed materials.
Yes, the florals and the Laura Ashley motif that was popular then. And then the painters that I personally, had little postcards of that I stuck up on my wall, like John William Waterhouse and Henry Wallace. And then I had my own, during my English studies, fascination with Mary Shelley and Frankenstein and all of that kind of period. And for me, it was just perfectly timed with this angst that I was going through.
And so now you're saying there's more of that coming into the design now?
Yeah, and as we were talking with Callie, who owns Supply, and she was also talking about how maximalism is in and how helpful that is to them because they sell floral wallpaper and stripes and, ornate patterns. And I think we'll probably look back at this time and wonder what brought that on, and maybe it is the comforts of home, which are some of the things we've been talking about, but a desire to kind of escape.
I would say we definitely have a whole lot more wall treatments now.
Absolutely.
Wood, like molding and trim happening, so much more than there was just 10 years ago.
Do you agree? Absolutely. Yeah. Even 10 years ago, and maybe even 5 years ago. I really think it's happening quickly that people are investing in escapism in their homes and creating spaces that don't challenge, that instead provide comfort. I love Georgian style, the Georgian era, and there are some very beautiful Georgian details that seem to be popular. Even some of the Moroccan exotic spaces that I think, widespread firms like, well, like anthropology are picking up on, that people want exoticism and escape from where they live. So maybe you're in Ohio, but you can have a little bit of Morocco in your Ohio or whatever it is. So the collections seem to be leaning in fashion and in furnishings to past shapes and forms and ornate shapes and forms. Design focusing on comfort, layering rich colors, rich textiles, plush furnishings for rainy days spent reading and staying home. And I think that's partially because of what we've been going through.
We were all stuck at home.
And then, you know, I know that the clean line and the white box and the kind of museum style spaces will always have their place. And I love them. They're beautiful. I think what to me I would tell people, or and what I feel myself, is that yes, it's great to challenge yourself and to be intellectually stimulated by these different ideas and go out into the world and experience edge and drama and change and difference and other. But isn't it nice when you go home to relax into your space? I mean, this is my own. I feel like domestic interiors and home interiors are about comforts. And maybe I'm definitely influenced by these experiences we've been through recently. But I feel like it's rough out there, and we all maybe could benefit with a little bit of escape, a little romanticism in our lives.
Yeah, probably, I guess, because I'm such an architect. I'm not quite as much, though I do love, especially some of the Art Nouveau wallpapers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that gets a little just too much for me, and so to have that comfort, I need to have less is more kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you're more of a, I like things bring me comfort, but things don't bring everybody comfort. They make people crazy.
But, yeah, although I have bright colored things in my house too.
That's true.
So there's that. But it is fun to see that there is so much detail happening, because we spend a lot more time talking about it.
It's fun. And you know, one of the projects we're working on is really exemplifying that currently. And it's going to be fun to see all that come together.
And it is, the builders really have to pay attention to a lot of detail, because we're adding so much more molding and trim and how the wallpaper edges come together and which corners. And, I mean, there's so much starting and finishing, and you have to really think through all of that. Whereas before, if it was just a drywall wall, you don't really have to think about where it stops and starts and how are we going to finish off this detail and how is the trim going to end here.
When we were talking with Brad, we were talking a little bit about how complicated it can be when you have a lot of finishes coming together in one space. To me, the answer is don't pull back from it. Just lean into it. Add more.
Add more.
But, you know, there's also the argument that really, really good, solid, clean line spaces need a lot of solid build too. And so the finish out's perfect. So there is a little bit of forgiveness you can get if you go back in and layer in finishes later.
Yeah.
So it's about striking
that balance.
I've just
been thinking about a lot of my past construction site meetings recently, where we're constantly talking about, okay, well, where is this wall? You know, we're trimming out the wall and we're adding wall paneling and we're adding this detail. And we're like, okay, well, where is it going to end? Well, it can't end there. Well, this wall is actually a little bit longer than that. Well, so this can't mirror that. So we have to make it look like it does. Well, then do these doors, do they line up with the front doors that are right next to it? Do we need to make sure that paneling is all aligned? So there's just constant a lot of talk about all this stuff, and then beams in the ceilings, and there's, you know, then the trim around the beams, and where is that falling, and how is that hitting the ceiling at an angle, or if it's flat, what's catching it on the other side?
And didn't it feel like for a long time?
Sometimes I'm like a dog with a ball running around.
And for a while, didn't it feel like there wasn't as much of that?
Yes.
I think there was a period of time.
I would say when I first started in 2003, there was hardly any.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. When I started in interiors, I was at a very traditional firm, so there was a lot of a lot of thinking about this ornate kind of applying paneling and applying trim details and application of finishes. Mm-hmm. And then for many years, I was in firms where that was not the case. It was very
The early 2000s.
Stripped down.
Right.
And it was stripped down. And it was, we still did wall paneling, but everything had, it didn't have quite the mix of all of the different trims and profiles. Now I believe we kind of look at everything. We do look at everything and think, how can I make this more interesting by mm-hmm. adding more versus stripping away? So maybe we're in that swing too, where we're swinging into,
I think we are,
a really ornate phase and swinging away from a more stripped down phase.
I mean, I haven't had this much talk about crown in a long time.
Yeah.
This wasn't, year, it seems.
Wasn't crown molding a bad word or
it
bad
was.
Two words back
yeah.
when you, yeah, nobody wanted
crown molding.
And now
we're working on ever. And again, where does it start and stop? And mm-hmm. when you have ceiling changes, mm-hmm. so it's, and how does it hit the window trim if it's coming down? You know,
so
the
are
windows
you,
are up high.
Are you finding any of that too in the overarching kind of site planning, where there's more circles and shapes
in the
sites? No, it's still mm-hmm. very streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I am working on an older house from the 70s right now that does have a whole bunch of existing molding and, walls trimmed out. And we've been trying to enhance it more in how we treat it versus how they treated it back then. It's been really interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole ceiling and the coffered ceilings and everything and the way the doors are. A lot.
It makes me think about a 1970s interior that we were working on, where I had a little bit of a power struggle with the homeowner because I wanted to keep all of the paneled walls and the sort of that warm panel tone that for many years people wanted to get away from. I thought, well, there's so much of it. Let's just embrace it. The value of it is there, but it wasn't. It's hard to live with. It's not for everybody. It can't be. I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. So, all right. Well, I think that's a wrap, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio, and together, partners at Amity Kett.